This is the top deck of the century, the kind of thing legends are made of. Your hands are shaking with anticipation as your eyes dart around the table. The Sakoma player is almost ready to go for it with an infinite mana combo, and the Rakdos player has their commander online, and they've just been waiting for a card draw source to reload their hands. And the Urumi player has been stocking their graveyard with creatures to reanimate threefold. You tap out and cast your Haymaker spell, catapulting yourself ahead of everyone else. The Rakdos and Sakoma players both groan, cursing your lucky top deck, but the Urumi player holds up a hand and says, "Wait, I have a response." Your heart falls into your stomach as they tap two islands and hold up a counterspell. "Don't count your chickens until they resolve," they warn you. Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and today we're going to discuss the state of blue counterspells. Last year we did an episode all about the state of green ramp, so I think it's about time we talked about another color's signature type of spell. Now, with over 300 cards which fall into this category, this could potentially be a monster of an episode. There's a good chance I may divide this into multiple episodes. And, you know, bear with me as I get things started, because before I can even delve into the counterspells themselves, I think it's important to actually try to define what a counterspell is. And if you're enjoying these episodes, please consider giving us a like, leaving us a comment, or subscribing on YouTube, or giving us a like on your podcasting app of choice. It really helps us out. Let's start with the basics, trying to actually define what a counterspell is. Fundamentally, counterspells are a check which a player can use to determine whether or not a spell which is on the stack resolves or not. Most spells have an effect only when they resolve, which I guess seems sort of obvious, but there are some spells which have an effect on cast as well. Most famously, the Eldrazi Titans, who have triggers which go onto the stack as soon as the spell is cast. This means that even if you counter the spell, that triggered ability will still resolve. Back in the day, Counterspell was printed as a card type called Interrupt, cards faster than instants, which couldn't be responded to except by another Interrupt. While that card type has thankfully been removed from the game with all of its odd rules complexity, the concept of a counterspell being a blue player's opportunity to interrupt the casting of a spell and to have a say in whether or not it resolved remains at the core of how all counterspells work. This means that even cards which don't say counter-target spell on them are potentially used as counterspells, particularly when they are throwing an opponent off of their plan by sending a card that they were counting on to resolve back to their hand, or into exile, or into their library. I am saying this because we will be discussing a few cards which wouldn't show up on a basic Scryfall search of counter-target spell. I also have to acknowledge that counterspells have a bit of a stigma associated with them, particularly among newer Magic players. Part of it has to do with the nature of blue, including tricky forms of interaction like mill, bounce spells, and of course counterspells. Players coming over from other TCGs or CCGs like Hearthstone don't deal with counterspells due to the limitations baked into the rules of those games, which are meant to accommodate quick, snappy, turn-based gameplay between two players through a virtual client, and counterspells really do interrupt the flow of that gameplay. To newer players, a spell being stomped by a counterspell feels like they never got to even play with their card. When I'm teaching new players, I try to liken it to the black mage casting a spell like Doomblade or a white mage casting Swords to Plowshares. Answers allow the game to be interactive, and this prevents the player who draws the biggest threat from just running away with the game. The blue mage has their most definitive answers while a spell is on the stack, and otherwise they have very few options for card types like artifacts and enchantments, which have already resolved. My goal for this episode is to help you choose which counterspells are right for your deck, so I will be giving these spells a very rough ranking up in the left corner of the screen. But I do also hope to highlight when a particular card may be a really good match for a very specific game plan. And in that case, the card's synergy may bump it up a few ranks in your own card evaluation for your deck. And as with most things, if you're looking to optimize your deck, you usually want to err on the side of cheaper counterspells, so that you can both advance your game plan, such as by playing mana rocks or engine pieces like Rhystic Study, while also being able to counter a spell. But free counterspells aren't really right for every kind of game. The more casual the game, using casual in Sage of Fables' definition on their deck-building alignment chart, the less you really need free counterspells. You're going to eventually have a lot more mana to play with anyway. And the more battlecruisery games are going to be fought more on the battlefield than they are on the stack. So in a battlecruiser metagame, for example, where the biggest threats that opponents will often play will be creatures, it may actually be correct to replace a negate with a removed soul, as countering creature spells could be more important for you and for your metagame than countering non-creature spells. I won't always assume that this is the case, and I will try my best to highlight the most general use cases for a blind metagame whenever I can. Just as with the state of green ramp, we're going to start out at the lowest cost to counter a spell and work our way up to higher cost spells. The old standard cost of a counterspell was 2 mana value. It was, well, counterspell. And in modern design, you're looking closer to 3 mana value for cancel. The standard counterspell tends to be heavy in blue cost, requiring at least 2 blue mana in addition to any generic mana costs. Standard counterspells are also hard counters. They counter the spell and do not include any quote-unquote unless clause. These are more soft counterspells, usually giving the owner of the spell an additional cost for them to be able to prevent their spell from being countered. Standard counterspells are also unconditional. Cancel and counterspell aren't limited in the types of spells they can counter. Standard counterspells also don't compensate your opponents with anything for them losing their spell on the stack, and standard counterspells are no-frills affairs. You don't get any additional upside from countering the spell. Card draw, +1/+1 counters, scrying, tap downs, bounces, or anything else are upsides that some counterspells have in order to justify their higher cost. We've also talked about offensive versus defensive counterspells before, but very briefly to review, defensive counterspells are meant to stop opponents from landing a threat or advancing their game plan in a meaningful way, while offensive counterspells are used to force through a threat of your own or to protect one of your threats or your overall game plan, using a counterspell to stop opponents from countering you. The last point to mention is that counterspells in Commander are used much differently than counterspells in other formats. There really is no good way to build a solid draw-go style control deck, where your goal is to one-for-one your opponents early and then overwhelm them late with more powerful threats. Because if you one-for-one 3 different opponents during your turn cycle, you're going to be down 3 cards and your opponents are only going to be down 1 card each. Being stuck in the role of table police and trying to counter or control everything is almost always a losing proposition in Commander. Instead of trying to one-for-one all of your opponents to death, counterspells are best used judiciously, with the goal of stopping key plays by your opponents. It's almost always correct to try to counter someone's win condition while it's on the stack, but it's usually wrong to try to counter someone's ramp spell. Obviously, there is no hard and fast rule for this, but if you generally want to reserve your counterspells, you want to do so for a defensive use, stopping your opponent from putting you on the clock, whether through an actual game-winning threat, or from an engine, which will quickly overwhelm you with advantage. Or, offensively, stopping opponents from answering your game plan, particularly when you are trying to put them on the clock. We're going to start our discussion with free counterspells. As there are a number of counterspells which can be cast without spending mana, most of which have some significant setup cost or an additional hidden cost in order to actually cast the spell. They may also have some conditions on what sort of spells they can counter. Force of Will is likely the most universally playable version, as it is an unconditional hard counter. Though decks which are extremely light on blue may have difficulty keeping a blue card in hand in order to exile to Force of Will, and it can be very painful when you have to pitch another counterspell to Force of Will, only for an opponent to have had that counterspell of their own. The 1 life cost isn't nothing, but it isn't likely to be a major cost in Commander. Force of Will is also nice because it can be used either offensively or defensively. You can use it to back up your own threat that you're trying to force through, or stop opponents' threats when you're otherwise tapped out. Next up in terms of raw power is likely Fierce Guardianship. In spite of being a conditional counterspell, Fierce Guardianship can stop all non-creature spells, which means it can hit most of the big haymakers an opponent is going to be trying to cast, while also being free to cast if your commander is out. This is another free counterspell that is easy to use either offensively or defensively. It also doesn't force you to suffer card disadvantage the way a Force of Will does, so it may work even better in decks that are lighter on blue, and it's easier to cast when the setup costs can be met. but just having the non-creature spell condition definitely makes it worse than Force of Will. Fierce Guardianship is great when you're on a game plan for your deck where you can expect to cast your commander early in the game, particularly when the commander's mana value is less than the critical turn of your metagame. The idea being that if you can reasonably expect to land your commander before people are going for it, then you can reasonably expect to be able to cast Fierce Guardianship for free. In CEDH, 2-mana value commanders make Fierce Guardianship really, really good, for instance. Next up, Pact of Negation, and this one actually has a mana value of 0, not just a cost reduction like others. It's also an unconditional hard counter, but it does have a rather significant setup cost, though it is one that you can play around. Just as with Force of Will, Pact of Negation can be used either offensively or defensively, but Pact of Negation works a little better on offense than it does on defense. When used defensively, Pact is pretty good since it lets you develop while holding up interaction for free, and it doesn't have any card disadvantage baked into it. When used offensively, though, Pact can be amazing, as you can often avoid paying the 3 blue-blue altogether if you win the game after casting Pact of Negation. Backing up a Thoracle Consult with Pact of Negation has been a solid way to end many games in CEDH. This is probably also a good time to talk about Spite Pacting, or casting Pact of Negation defensively when there's no reasonable way for you to pay for it. The etiquette for this varies from pod to pod, but in CEDH, it's generally felt to be in poor taste, as the Rule Zero conversation implicit in CEDH is that everyone is playing to win, and if you cast a Pact of Negation without the ability to pay for it, you've essentially conceded the game in order to stop somebody else from winning. If you have the possibility of being able to pay for it, such as having a Dark Ritual in hand that you could use to get the 3 blue-blue to pay off the spell, or just some kind of a plan to get that Dark Ritual into hand, or even just the possibility of drawing it with one of your draw engines. It's a risky play, but you could argue that you were playing to your outs of either I lose on your turn, or I have a chance to not lose on my turn. The other situation where this is more of a gray area is when you suspect that the person trying to win has protection, and you're trying to bait that protection out with a Pact of Negation to allow another player to counter the threat in response. In this case, you're casting Pact of Negation and not expecting it to resolve. This is more a form of good cooperation between players than it is a spite pact. Outside of CEDH, I'd argue that it is likely even greater breach of etiquette to spite pact, as implicit in that game action is the statement that you would rather not play the game at all than let somebody resolve a particular spell. Moving on from Pact of Negation, we get into the more debatable free counter spells, where the relative value of inclusion depends more on the composition of your deck. Force of Negation is an almost purely defensive counter spell, where you can pitch another blue card in order to counter a non-creature spell. So this is a very heavily conditional hard counter. It only works against non-creature spells like Fierce Guardianship, and it can only be cast for free on another player's turn. And it has the card disadvantage like Force of Will baked into it. The card shines best when you have the ability to win at instant speed, or you can play a really effective game on other players' turns, which allows you to use Force of Negation offensively as well. In CEDH, Force of Negation is often used to back up an ad nauseum, particularly in decks that are looking to play at instant speed. But it's often cut in the decks that are more planning to play on their own turns versus opponents' turns. Mental Misstep deserves special mention because of the Phyrexian mana. This card can be played for 2 life instead of a single blue, and it does see play in CEDH. It is an extremely conditional counterspell, only hitting 1-mana value cards. CEDH is a metagame where there are many, many impactful 1-mana value cards, including a lot of interaction like other counterspells, and lots of broken mana rocks. Decks that are going deep on interaction can reasonably expect to cast it whenever they draw it, but it likely would not see play without being free. For instance, Spell Snare is a 1-mana value counterspell which can only target 2-mana value spells, and it sees almost no play in CEDH in spite of 2-mana value spells generally being much more impactful. Cards like Underworld Breach, Thassa's Oracle, Tainted Pact, and countless problematic stacks pieces weigh in at 2-mana value. Mindbreak Trap is starting to see more play in CEDH as another free counterspell, and it's one heck of a potent counter with one heck of a setup cost. One specific opponent must have cast at least three spells for Mind Break Trap to be free. So in CDH, it's seeing play more and more as players are looking for ways to stop Ad Nauseam and Underworld Breach lines. Specifically lines involving Brain Freeze, since Mind Break Trap can exile all of the copies of a spell from the stack, as well as preventing players from getting another bite at the apple. It's a powerful option to fight Storm decks, with fringe benefits being that it can get around can't-be-countered clauses on cards like Destiny Spinner and Veil of Summer. But the upfront cost of 2 blue-blue can make it a difficult pill for some decks to swallow. Misdirection deserves mention here as well, since its cost is very comparable in a lot of ways to Force of Will, though it is effectively a much more limited counterspell without actually saying counter on it anywhere. You can use Misdirection as a counterspell by targeting another counterspell. If Misdirection resolves, you change the target of the counterspell to Misdirection, which means the counterspell has to be able to target a blue instant with a mana value of 5. Misdirection then leaves a stack, and the counterspell on the stack fizzles because it no longer has a target. This does get around the can't be countered clause, but Misdirection is essentially Force of Will, which can only be used to counter other counterspells. And like Force of Will, it's a pretty strong source of card disadvantage. It's a little bit outside of the scope of this episode, but being able to use it as a way to redirect another spell to target something else, perhaps saving one of your creatures or one of your permanents, it is upside, and I do respect that, but as I mentioned, it's a bit outside of the scope of this episode in particular. Foil likely falls a step lower than our other counters so far, which is a bit odd considering it's both a hard and unconditional counterspell. But it really relies on being in a heavily blue deck where you can reasonably expect to have an island in hand to pitch. And it does require you to discard two cards, not just one. Daze is probably the next free counterspell to consider, and it's a very soft counterspell, though an unconditional one. Paying the one isn't really a big ask at most points in most games of Commander. And while there may have been volumes written on how Daze can work as an offensive counterspell and a pseudo-ritual, the setup cost to make it work for this conditional of a counterspell means the card sees very little play in Commander. Disrupting Shoal is another odd duck in Commander. Even in CEDH, which has a relatively narrow band of mana value for the metagame's card pool, the card doesn't see play, as the card's free cast setup cost is really quite steep. And the setup cost is also an unknown until you need to know it. Certainly it's nice that it's a hard counter and can hit any type of spell, but even in CEDH, where you can probably count on most spells being between 1 and 3 mana value, the fact that you have to pitch a specifically blue card with a mana value specifically equal to the spell that you're trying to counter is pretty rough. Finally, there's Thwart. What, you haven't heard of Thwart? Don't worry, I hadn't either. The setup cost for this unconditional hard counter is brutal. Return 3 islands to your hand. Even mono blue decks could have a hard time meeting this requirement, and it's virtually impossible to cast for free in 3 plus color decks. And the 3 island requirement also means that the card cannot be cast for free until you have played or ramped into at least 3 islands. I think there's a good reason I hadn't heard of this one. Let's move on next to 1 mana value counterspells. Swansong is likely the best 1 mana value counterspell, giving a hard counter against instants, sorceries, and enchantments. Not being able to hit artifacts can be rough, and this is also our first example of a counterspell that provides compensation to an opponent, giving them a mostly irrelevant 2/2 flying bird. But only requiring a single blue mana and being a hard counter means Swansong is often going to see play before many free counterspells. After Swansong, there are some interesting choices. Flusterstorm is probably the most played counterspell after Swansong at the 1 mana value slot, as it offers a few unique edges for its low cost. While it is a soft counter, and a conditional one, it plays really well on offense, where we expect to cast a threat with a storm count of 1, then bait out a counterspell from an opponent, storm count 2, at which point we cast Flusterstorm, targeting a counterspell, creating 2 copies of Flusterstorm, for a total cost of 3 that our opponent needs to pay in order to resolve their spell. Like other soft counterspells, Flusterstorm only gets worse the later the game goes, but because it scales to the number of spells being cast, it can overcome that weakness better than a lot of other soft counterspells can. The fact that it is also not a single spell, but a spell in multiple copies is also sometimes relevant, particularly when an opponent only kept one mana open, expecting their own Swan Song to be adequate protection against counterspells. And if you're playing with Strixhaven Magecraft cards like Archmage Emeritus or Stormkiln Artist, the copies will draw you more cards or make you more treasure. The choices after this become very metagame dependent, though. Miscast, Dispel, and Spell Pierce have their own strengths and weaknesses, and one may be a better fit for your deck than others. Miscast is probably the hardest soft counter at 1 mana value, taxing an opponent 3 additional mana to keep their spell on the stack, and it is very comparable to Flusterstorm. While it lacks some of the upsides that Flusterstorm does, it is more broadly applicable and tends to do slightly better on defense, where the storm count may only be 1 when you go to counter an opponent's instant or sorcery. And a 3-mana tax on a soft counterspell means that even if they can force their spell through, you've also often drained them of the additional mana they may have been counting on to multi-spell that turn. This makes Miscast pretty good early on, although it does lose power as the game goes on and players have access to more and more mana. If you're planning to go late game frequently, this could be a reason not to include Miscast. Spell Pierce is less conditional than any of the other spells we've discussed so far, being able to target any non-creature spell, but it's a soft counter with a tax of only 2 mana, which is significantly less than the 3 mana, and it falls off in power more quickly than cards like Flusterstorm and Miscast. So it's much more useful in decks that are hoping the game really doesn't go for too long. Dispel is the only hard counter that we've looked at thus far for 1 mana value, but it's also the most conditional, only able to target instants, making it just plain worse than Swansong. Its general use case in CDH is to stop other counterspells, while also occasionally being able to stop an ad nauseum. A new contender in this category would be An Offer You Can't Refuse, which is a hard counter, conditional to a broad category of non-creature spells, and like Swansong, it has compensation for opponents, this time with 2 treasure tokens. Unlike the soft counters we've discussed so far, I would argue that An Offer You Can't Refuse gets better the longer the game goes, as the advantage of 2 additional treasures goes down relative to the amount of mana which players already have access to. But 2 mana, even as treasures, are probably going to be more relevant than a 2-2 flyer in most games. I would personally prefer to run Flusterstorm over An Offer You Can't Refuse, but I think it's a very valid discussion as to whether it is better or worse than the trio of Miscast, Spell Pierce, or Dispel, and I think it deserves some serious consideration here. I also think that Stubborn Denial is a serious contender. Going from a very soft tax of 1 on the condition counter-target non-creature spell to a hard counter if you have a creature with a power 4 or greater. This was one of the big draws for CDH decks like Tasigur a few years ago, but it seems like CDH play these days really doesn't revolve around that quite so much. Outside of CDH, though, if your commander has 4 or more power, I really like this as another strong 1 mana value counterspell. I'm not going to cover the various blue and X counterspells in this discussion, which are technically 1 mana value, as those are really soft counters which force you to often pay more than the person who is actually casting the spell, without really draining them of their ability to cast more spells later in the turn. Nor am I going to discuss some of the hyper-conditional spells which only counter sorceries, only counter a spell that targets a permanent you control, or only counter a spell that targets you. But I will mention that Abjur doesn't see much play because blue tends to have very few permanents on the field, particularly few that it can afford to sacrifice in order to fuel a counterspell. Wash Away is really just a cancel that you can occasionally cast for a single blue mana to counter the casting of a commander, which generally isn't a card you want to spend a counterspell on. I will give a quick nod to both Force Spike and Disrupt, the former of which is an unconditional but very soft counterspell, and the latter of which is a very conditional and very soft counterspell, which happens to cantrip. Of note, even a deck that's hungry for cantrips like Krark and Sakashima doesn't run Disrupt, which I think speaks to the weakness of the single mana tax on a soft counter. I do want to point out creature counters like Siren Storm Tamer, Mausoleum Wanderer, and Curse Catcher. The latter of these two actually see play in some modern archetypes of spirits and merfolk respectively, and very little play outside of those tribal decks. Where the relative softness of the counterspell they offer is made up for by allowing these creatures to synergize with the tribal effects of your deck. These creatures are onboard counterspells, and they lose a lot of the power of surprising your opponents with counterspells, where the counterspells which are lurking in your hand are unknown information. But I do think that Siren Storm Tamer stands apart from these others slightly. The pirate subtype is shockingly relevant if Malcolm is your commander. While a very conditional counterspell, as it only stops spells that target you or a creature you control, it's also a hard counter and it's a stifle effect, being able to counter abilities, which means that you can stop some of the channel lands from Kamigawa like Otawara or Eganjo, though it doesn't stop Bosaiju outside of some very circumstantial scenarios, such as an opponent trying to Bosaiju away an enchantment creature or artifact creature you control. Next up, at 2 mana value, this is where we start to have direct comparisons to old reliable counterspell, and we're no longer considering conditions of softness or other things we may have had to accept due to the counterspell being cheaper. Original counterspell is a hard counter, it's unconditional, and it costs blue-blue. Everything that we discuss in this mana value gets weighed against this. Negate has kind of become the modern equivalent, which switches to the cost of 1 and a blue, but also only works against non-creature spells. The next big 2 mana value counterspell I really want to look at is Mana Drain, the one which almost always gets brought up when comparing spells to counterspell. It's just as hard of a counterspell, it's just as unconditional, it has an identical mana value and even the same mana cost. But it also gives you a burst of free mana on your next turn, allowing it to act as a sort of ritual. And it's still getting cut from many CEDH decks because blue-blue can be difficult to hold up in the game. Mana Drain is an absolute blowout when it hits, and I'd honestly consider it very fair even in casual games of Commander. Yes, it can give you a massive ritual for your next turn to catapult you ahead, but it's a ritual, not a permanent boost to mana. For a player to really abuse Mana Drain, they need to have a way to spend that mana. And the size of the ritual scales with the mana value of spells that players are slinging. It's not something that a player can routinely count on, apart from the known mana values of players' commanders, which, as we already mentioned, countering commanders is not often a good course to victory, as they're going to get that spell back, they're not down a card. It's a very powerful counterspell, absolutely, but its primary use is defensive. The blue-blue cost is harder to use offensively, and you're less likely to see another turn when you're going for it. If you do, the spells you're going to counter offensively are going to provide a lot less of a mana value for your ritual. Another 2 mana value counter, which sees a lot more play in CEDH, is actually Delay, which changes the formula by making a 2 mana value spell only costing a single colored mana, sort of like Negate. It's also a hard, unconditional counter, with the downside that the spell is exiled and suspended for 3 turns, which means that the spell's owner will eventually get to cast it for free. It's a powerful spell in CEDH, where 3 turns from now might never happen because so many players are trying to win the game with 0-turn clocks. It does get worse in games where players are expecting to go into the long game. Muddle the Mixture also sees a significant amount of play in CEDH, less because of its power as a counterspell, because, really, it's a very conditional counter that only hits instants and sorceries, which is below rate for a 2 mana value counterspell. But because it can be transmuted for 1 blue-blue to tutor up any 2 mana value spell in your deck, that includes cards that can win the game. As I mentioned before, Thassa's Oracle, Tainted Pact, Underworld Breach. Muddle the Mixture trades its strength as a counterspell for the utility of acting as a tutor for key cards in your deck. Narset's Reversal is truly an odd duck of a counterspell because it behaves much more like a remand than true counterspells, putting the spell back into its owner's hand, which only buys you a turn, but it also gives you a copy of the spell. Narset's Reversal does have the standard cost of blue-blue, and it only hits instants and sorceries. It doesn't do a lot of good when you're trying to protect your board from a board wipe, but it could turn an overloaded Cyclonic Rift back on its owner. It becomes a spell that is truly situational, and you will most likely know if there's enough powerful instance and sorceries being thrown around in your metagame to really justify it. Unsubstantiate is another example of a pseudo-counterspell, returning a spell or creature to its owner's hand for one and a blue. This is a very castable and very flexible piece of interaction. When you are playing a deck which is going for a very quick clock on your game plan, bouncing a spell back to its owner's hand is almost as good as countering it. And the fact that it can also remove a troublesome creature for a turn is a very nice upside. Another very odd card, which many brewers have been trying to find a home in CDH for, is Counterbalance, an enchantment for blue-blue, which allows you to reveal the top card of your library and counter a spell. If the mana value of your top deck matches the mana value of the spell being cast exactly. It requires a metagame with a fairly low mana curve to be effective, which is why there are so many brewers in CDH looking to find a home for it. But it also requires additional setup in the form of top deck manipulation. Sensei's Divining Top or a heavy focus on scrying will be critical in order to take advantage of this card. This is also the mana value where mana leaks come into play. Mana Leak was introduced all the way back in Stronghold when Wizards of the Coast was looking for ways to fix Counterspell. Thus, introducing a soft Counterspell, which is unconditional, but allows the controller of the spell targeted to buy their way out. The tax, which a soft counter at this level varies, from 3 mana, which is actually quite good, but even then still doesn't see a lot of play. Modern soft counters at the 2 mana value slot are often going to cost 1 or 2 extra mana on the tax for the person being targeted. And there are few soft counter spells which can have a tax of 4, but you have to meet some stronger setup cost. Overall, these see very little play outside of very specific decks in Commander, because the value of these cards plummet as the game goes on. If every player has 10 mana valuable, a tax of 3 gets a whole lot worse, to the point where it's basically a dead draw. Arcane Denial is a hard, unconditional counterspell for 1 and a blue, which cantrips. Sounds too good to be true. Yep, it gives your opponent 2 cards at the beginning of the next upkeep as compensation for countering their spell. Looking at classic card advantage theory in Commander, this is actually a decent deal. You wind up card neutral to 2 of your opponents, and down 1 card compared to the person who you stopped. And if the spell you countered was important enough to counter, the cards they're drawing are probably worse than the card you just countered. Memory Lapse is also a fascinating bit of design. Another hard counter spell for 1 and a blue, which has the downside of putting the card back on top of its owner's library. Pushing someone's sweeper back a turn can change the outcome of the game. But the longer the game goes, again, the less pushing someone's spell back by a single turn matters. I'm also going to give a quick mention to some off-color counter spells, Drown in the Lock and Dovin's Veto. The latter of which is basically a negate, which is itself uncounterable with the added cost of needing a white mana. And the former is sort of bottlenecked early in the game until players have multiple cards in their graveyards, while still providing the upside of being usable as a creature removal spell. I quite like Drown in the Lock at higher powered games where players are more likely to be cracking fetch lands and playing lower mana value cards anyway to quickly fill up their graveyards and to be better targets for the spell overall. Quick honorable mentions to Izzet Charm and Dimir Charm. The former has a mode to be a less good mana leak while also being an expensive shock or a decent loot, while the latter could counter a sorcery in a pinch while also being a decent form of self mill and a good way to destroy low-cost creatures. I also want to mention a few counter spells on legs, including Malevolent Hermit and Spellstutter Sprite. The latter sees very little play, as very few decks lean on fairies as a significant, reliable tribe that they expect to have on board. The former, however, is sneakily a 3-mana value counterspell, and only against non-creature spells and only as a soft counter. But once you can disturb it back into play as a benevolent geist, it can be amazing, making all of your non-creature spells uncounterable. Effectively acting as a perpetual, constant offensive counterspell for all of your non-creature spells. That's amazing! You'll know if your metagame is going to make Malevolent Hermit good if there are a lot of decks depending on non-creature spells, or you have a lot of ways you could potentially get it into your graveyard. Once you get into 3 mana value counterspells, you're going to be paying real mana for real spells. It's rare even in casual games to have 3 mana worth of spare change lying around to hold up, and it's the reason why a card like Cancel sees very little play in Commander. This, remember, is the modern unconditional hard counterspell. Most of the 3-mana value counterspells which do see play do so because they have a way to cheat on costs, or they will provide a specific, significant advantage when you cast them. Historically, cards like Spell Crumble and Hinder were game-changing counterspells, which could tuck a player's commander before the tuck rule change. Since that time, they don't really see a lot of play. But before the tuck rule change, this was a way to deny a player their commander perpetually, and fundamentally changed the way their decks could function. Today, very few 3-mana value counterspells see real play. Some decks will try to make use of a card like Forbid, though paying 1 blue-blue to counter and having enough cards in hand to pitch for the buyback is a real cost. Low-color blue decks can also make use of Archmage's Charm, which has several very powerful modes on it, enough so that it sees play in Modern. This is an area where Modern sets will often highlight a specific set mechanic, so you may choose to include one of those counterspells because of its synergy with your game plan. This is also where some cost reduction mechanics come into play, often requiring a setup cost of controlling specific permanent types, controlling a wizard, controlling a spirit, controlling artifacts or enchantments. All of these cards exist, and it might be right for your deck, but only if you plan to see the game go long, and only if they fit with your deck's game plan. There are also plenty of multicolor charms which can perform counters as one of their modes. Just like I hinted at with Archmage's Charm, they only fit into decks which have the right color identities. But while you don't want to spend 3 mana to counter a spell most times, particularly not 3-colored mana, the modal nature of the card means that it is rarely a bad top deck, particularly late in the game when you can expect to have lots of mana to spend, and the flexibility can get you out of some tight situations. Counterspells on legs get really interesting at 3-mana value. Lulmage Mentor can be a powerhouse in merfolk decks, where you can easily establish a draw-go-style control on the stack if you really want to. Though needing to tap 7 merfolk to counter a spell can be a little difficult to set up, you do net a 1-1 merfolk wizard creature token every single time you successfully counter a spell using this activated ability or any other counterspell we've talked about. If you're going to go wide enough, this can let you lock down the stack very well. Urtai, Wizard Adept, sees very little play. Why? Urtai has a tap in his activated ability, which means you need to wait a full turn cycle before you can make use of his ability, and then it's 4 mana and a tap to get 1 counterspell out of him. You really want to be in a draw-go-style deck to make Urtai work, and as we discussed, that's really hard in multiplayer format like Commander to make work. Branching into multicolored creatures, Spellqueller deserves special mention as a unique Azorius option. A 2-3 flyer for 1 a white and a blue, which can exile a spell off the stack with a mana value of 4 or less, the hitch being that if Spellqueller leaves the battlefield, then your opponent can cast the spell they were trying to resolve before for free. It's a strange card, but a unique option, particularly if you're going to go into Spirit Tribal or Flying Tribal. And technically, if you want to go into a Blink-style deck, or a deck with a lot of sacrifice outlets, you can do some shenanigans where you cast Spellqueller, put its ETB ability on the stack, then blink or bounce or sacrifice Spellqueller, triggering its Leaves the Battlefield ability. Just like the O-Ring trick, the exiled spell will then be exiled forever with no chance of ever being recast. There are very few counterspells which cost 4 mana or more which see regular play in Commander. Even cards which had previously made massive impacts on faster formats like Modern see very little play. Cryptic Command is a legitimately powerful spell with extremely powerful modes, but the cost is huge. And again, true draw-go-style control decks are extremely difficult to make use of in Commander. I'd even argue that old powerhouses like Glenalendra Archmage have fallen out of favor. Though Glenalendra actually can be a strong play in a mid-range deck, and people may be writing off this card prematurely. The upside to many of these expensive counterspells is that they'll put you up on cards, forcing you to pay more mana to overcome the inherent card disadvantage of one-for-one-ing a single one of your opponents. But it takes a lot of mana to be all set up and to be able to multispell to both develop your board and hold up an expensive counterspell. The other upside among the big counter spells that often earns them a slot is that this is the cost where most modern interpretations of Mana Drain are costed. The multicolored Plasm Capture doesn't see much play, but the mono blue Spell Swindle does. Variations of this include cards like Overwhelming Intellect, which can get you a big grip of cards, Access Denied can get you a Swarm of Thopters, and Mystic Confluence is probably more played in Commander than Cryptic Command, because the mana cost is much easier to swallow, and the flexibility can get you the confident counterspell, or it can get you multiple cards and a soft counterspell, or a soft counter and a bounce and a cantrip. In which case, it's often better to think of these big spells more like a big ramp spell or a big draw spell, which are also incidentally going to knock an opponent back a turn. Shout out to Dana Roach from Commander Central and the EDH Reccast for his conversations on Overwhelming Intellect, which kind of informed this part of the discussion. Just as with many 4-plus mana value spells, these are going to be on the higher side of your mana curve and should have bigger impacts, which swing the game in a big way, putting you up and your opponents down. Try not to get greedy with them. When you're ready to cast them, try to take advantage of the first good opportunity where you get paid off for having that spell. Some of the more expensive counter spells also include the ability to counter a spell without actually countering it. Similar to Spell Queller, Commit to Memory can be cast for 3 and a blue to put a spell or permanent on top of its owner's library, so it can be an expensive piece of removal or an expensive counter spell. It has the upside that it can also be aftermathed for 4 blue-blue to essentially Time Twister, shuffling everyone's hands and graveyards into their libraries and resetting everyone back to 7 cards in hand. 4 mana value is also the mana value that you can cast Venser, Shaper, Savant, being able to return a spell or permanent to its owner's hand while also being a creature, opening up some value lines using Bounce or Reanimation or Blink. Hullbreaker Horror is far more expensive, but essentially gives every spell you cast Venser's Claws, giving you extreme board and stack control, making it a potent option for decks that are trying to cheat it into play, whether with Polymorph or Reanimation. And over 6,000 words later, we'll bring our discussion of counterspells to a close. I obviously skipped over a ton of counterspells, and if I passed over one of your favorite hidden gems, let us know in the comments. I'd really love to talk about some more of these in a multifaceted episode at some point. I also didn't really talk about the commanders who dictate what kind of counterspells you may want to run, and I didn't dig into other colors' counterspells very much, apart from a few multicolored honorable mentions. So there's still a lot to discuss. You can find us on YouTube at Gemstone Mind Podcast, and if you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a like, subscribing to the channel, and leaving a comment. You can also add us on Twitter, GemstoneMindMTG, or you can email us, gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, I'm John, and this is Gemstone Mine.